OTBAM is live every morning from 7:30 on offtheball.com, YouTube, Facebook and Twitter.
Johnny Sexton, good morning to you.
Morning.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Are you fighting fresh and nice, calm week?
No, it was a good week. Obviously, when you win a final, you know, we had a good celebration Sunday. And then we actually had our 10-year reunion of the 2009 team. On Tuesday night, dinner, and then a day together on Wednesday, which was good crack.
Nice and quiet, I'm sure. Yeah. Wanted to ask you, we've just been discussing the Champions League there, and so I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I actually Googled yesterday Johnny Sexton, Liverpool, because I thought, oh, well, he's a Liverpool fan. But it turns out it was all sort of people added 2 and 2 and came up with 10.
You're just trying to wind me up now.
it was the halftime
you
reference.
You didn't that Google was that yesterday.
No, I did, but it told me that you weren't.
Because, yeah, well, we still have this.
People had heard the halftime story, talk, yeah. So they were like, oh, well, that's obvious then.
Yeah, no, I see, there's still arguments going on about this. So I denied saying Liverpool in the changing room.
Right.
But I obviously said in my post-match interview, that came to mind then. But I thought in the dressing room, I said, look, you've seen in other finals in years gone by.
Right.
But apparently I didn't.
Brian O'Driscoll swears that you said Liverpool.
Okay, well, I'm not going to argue with Brian, despite what he says, better arguments, but no, it was, I'm a Man United fan, still a Man United fan.
Right.
Even now.
So, proud to be as well. No, it's obviously a tough season, but I think, I can't wait for the final tomorrow night. I think I'm up for Spurs.
Right.
I think it'll be tougher for Liverpool than it would have been if it was Ajax, but we'll see.
Nobody really giving Spurs much of a shake. Like, we were just talking to Martin Lipton, who covers a lot of Spurs particularly, and he's like, look, it's 3-0 was what he was saying at the end. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I think when you're involved in sport and you've had the run that they've been on, like getting out of the group after losing, I think, their first 3 games, and then the way they finished against Man City, the way they finished against Ajax, you kind of, as a player, sometimes you just think, this is going to be our year, you know. Yeah. And I've been in teams before like that, and I'd say those Spurs players are probably a little bit like that. I'd say they feel like they can't lose it.
Well, it's such a weird dynamic given the heroics that both of them had in the semi-finals. Like, if any one of those things happens in any given year to one team, at that point you're assuming, well, our name is on the title here because it's written.
I didn't think of the Liverpool side of things. I was just thinking from a Tottenham point of view.
Try not to think about too much about Liverpool. Yeah.
Do you know the big discussion about Tottenham is the whole Harry Kane thing, and will he play, will he not play? Is he fit? Is he 100% fit? Is he 90% fit? Obviously, you'd have a different perspective on this. So, like, if you were a manager and you've had Harry Kane, he's 70% fit, 80% fit, 90% fit, when do you decide I'm taking a chance on him?
He looked 100% fit when he was running on the pitch after the Ajax game.
He did.
I think with footballers, it can be maybe slightly different to rugby players, because with rugby, there's a contact element that you just can't replicate until you get to a game. No matter how hard you try in training, like the impact of body on body in a match is just so different. So that's where rugby players can struggle to get match fit. I think with footballers, it can be a bit easier. Obviously they need that sharpness that they talk about. But, you know, I'm sure he would have, over the last couple of weeks, if you're back full training for a few weeks, I think he'll be ready to go. If he's just scraping back in on a Wednesday to get back for Saturday, I think that's slightly different. That's where you'd have some worries.
And if he was scraping back in of a Wednesday, would you chance him?
I don't know. I think Pochettino probably have a better idea than me. I'll leave that to him.
It is a point, though, isn't it, with players? The point that I made flippantly to Martin Lipton was you can't trust a player to tell you that he's fit, because if it's particularly a game of that magnitude. I know there's obviously a lot of science now that goes into these things, and it's not just, well, we take him on his word. But at the same time, from a player's point of view, I'm sure you're every opportunity you get to say, listen, I am good to go, put me in.
Yeah, and sometimes you can be your own worst enemy. You know, sometimes you can be, you know, not fit at all, and you're just... Some part of you just doesn't want the next guy to have a chance. Some part of you just wants to get out there and make sure you don't miss something. But then there's another part of you that thinks, you know, I could probably do a job, you know. And sometimes you can. Sometimes you can come back on a Wednesday and be in there for ages and you can bluff it a bit and you get away with it and everyone thinks you had a great game. And then there's other times where you come back and you're ready and you've trained hard and you're ready to go and things don't go well. And it's just... Like I said, it is getting more scientific, but I don't think there's an exact science behind coming back.
Bluff around it a bit. I wonder, like, it's interesting to hear you say about that sort of wanting to make sure that the next guy coming in doesn't get that opportunity. Are you still in that space? Because there was obviously a lot made of the Ross Byrne selection in the semi-final and people were reading a lot into it. And I know that Felipe Contepomi came out to try and sort of calm everybody down and say, listen, you know, Johnny's still our guy, by the way. Was there still an element of that for you there, like that sort of, listen, I'm still here, whippersnapper?
No, look, Leo's got our seasons mapped out, like, from the start. Like, I knew the plan from Christmas time.
Right.
What games I was going to play when I was fit, what games I wasn't going to play. And, you know, I knew that Ross got us to that position. You know, Ross had played a lot more league games than I had. I think I played 4 or 5, as opposed to he probably played maybe 12, 13 games. And he got us there and he deserved to play it. Now, I put my best argument in to try and make him change the plan and try and get back in there. And, you know, felt that after losing the final, and I hadn't played too much rugby since the Six Nations. I just felt that, you know, I would have loved to, but I could understand the way it went, and Ross did really well. And it's important for him. He's in the World Cup squad now, and, you know, I think that game will hopefully stand to him, and he can push his way in from there.
What do you sort of just rock up to Leo's desk office, knock on the door? You appear at the door, he goes, I know why you're here. Like, what sort of dynamic, what happens?
No, it's like, he knows I want to play when I'm fit. That's all, you know. It wasn't too long a conversation. I was like, what, are we still going with the plan? And he said, yeah, I think it's right for us and right for the team. And so that's how it went. And, you know, I was ready to go and ready, trained hard that week and made sure I was ready if I was called upon, because it's actually worse sometimes when you're on the bench, because, you know, you've got to prepare, like, you know, I could be on after 5 minutes, so I've got to be ready for the start of the game. But really, you're thinking about all the scenarios sort of when you come on at 50, if you're winning, if you're losing, if you're, you know, if things are tight. And, you know, I was just before I came on, things were, like, obviously tight, and then we got a score. So, you know, your plans can change in a minute. So things obviously changed just before I came on, and the game was a lot different than for me when I did come on.
With the Pro 14 obviously haven't wrapped up, and the way that it went, I presume you don't do too much analysis at this stage of what happened there. But I wondered about with the dust settled a little bit about Newcastle, if there's still elements of that kind of rankle with you a bit, or what's where are you at on that, or how do you sort of move past that? Is there any analysis of it? Is it just parked?
Oh, we did a load of analysis on it, yeah, because we wanted to learn from it for the Munster game and for the Glasgow final. And I think you saw some of it in the Glasgow final, not all of it. It was a pretty poor day in Glasgow, you know, conditions wise, and you know, really, really difficult conditions to play in. So you didn't probably see some of the stuff that we had talked about or worked on, but we took a lot from that game, and I think that'll stand to us going forward for some of those guys, you know, the guys that are 22, 23, I think they'll, you know, live with that game for the next 10 years, you know. I want to learn from it and for the next 2 years, you know. But Saracens are a top quality team, you know. They've won 3 of the last 4, and they're a hard team to stop, and they've got some, you know, they've got the core of the England team, but then they take some of the best players from the other countries, guys like Liam Williams, you know, Will Skelton, like, he's in the form of his life, and you see he's rumoured to be going back to Australia now, and you add in Vincent Cock, the tight head, so, like, you just add in those players, and it's quite a formidable team to play against. And we just felt that if we had taken our chances, and if a couple of decisions had gone our way that didn't go our way, things could have been a little bit different, but they weren't, and, you know, they beat us.
They're not bad.
Convincingly in the end.
Not bad.
They're
grand
though,
Are you
careful, yeah.
Yeah, they are, yeah. It's hard to see them going anywhere. We were talking about the Jurgen Klopp. He's done an interview with Jamie Carragher, and I think the Telegraph this morning, and he's talking a lot about City. Like, it almost feels to me like he's kind of saying, well, like, on the face of it, they are a better team than us. He's obviously not sort of exceeding that they're going to win, that City are going to win the Premier League over the next number of years, but he's clearly saying, well, you know, on any day, if it's 50-50, they win. There's an element of that between yourselves and Saracens. I mean, I know there will be other teams that will have their hand up as well, but there is an element of that it looks like at the minute, and I mean, maybe you say this after every Heineken Cup season, but it does appear that the two of ye are kind of thereabouts and are going to be for a little while.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have some good battles, you know, coming up with them. I think that, like, you can we spoke about small margins, like we beat them last year, you know, and we had a few injuries, but the impact that a player like, you know, Vunipola can have, or Will Skelton being, you know, back in really good form, and they just a couple of things just went their way this year. We didn't have a couple of guys that maybe would have made a bit of a difference for us in the final, but like I said, they totally deserve to be champions. You know, they beat us in that second half fairly convincingly, but we'd love to go back and, like I said, play the last few minutes of the first half and the start of that second half again, because there were some chances there that if we had taken, we would have just put a little bit more pressure on them, and things could have been different then. That's not to say that they still wouldn't, you know, we could have scored first and the second half, having not conceded at the end of it and been 17-3 up and still lost it. So they're that good. So it's just ifs and buts, but like, we're going to take a lot from it and learn from it. And you know, some of those learnings are tough to take, because they were things that, you know, we probably spoke about before the game.
At the stage of your career that you're at, are you doing much individual self-analysis on that, or is it just a team environment thing?
Yeah, it's both. Like, there's big learnings from it from my point of view as well. Like, you know, obviously if I had to go back and play the game, I try and do things slightly differently. But there was a lot of times in the first half, especially when we had the ball, I was in contact, like in a ruck, cleaning out or being tackled, and that doesn't often happen too much. And I was caught then, sort of after being last up out of the ruck, just holding out the width. I should have maybe just got in there and tried to break the shape that we had and trying to get in and get on the ball a bit more. So there's learnings there for me, maybe try not to be in the contacts in the first place, but sometimes that can just work out that way. It's more how to react after that and just get myself back into my position, as opposed to filling out, you know, in other people's positions and trying to keep that width that we talk about so much.
Do you review games just looking at yourself?
No, look, we review games together. I tend to not try and look at it by myself, because again, you look at it just through your own, and there's times where you have to do that as well. But I tend to just do the review with the player or with the team, and then if there's bits in that review where I think, oh, I need to look at that again, I'll look at it like through myself. And yeah, but I try not to overanalyze things anymore. I used to come home from a game and spend hours, you know, sitting watching the game and mulling over every mistake and decision I took. And there's moments that you got to take and learn from, but there's others that, you know, mistakes that look like your mistake that you can't do anything about, that they're actually not your
Somebody
mistake.
Somebody else, that guy, wasn't it?
If he just caught the ball, or if he just, you know, expected that it was for him and not for someone else, those type of things, you know, you can't do anything about them. So there's no point in analysing them to the nth degree. It's just, you know, things that happen in a game.
Given your position and seniority in the team as well, if you're looking at that analysis, what's your opportunity to be able to analyse others in the team, I suppose? I mean, because sometimes it can be welcome to a little quiet word with somebody to say, listen, maybe you should have been in a slightly different position here, and sometimes it might not be. But given your seniority in the team, is that something you can do, or have the avenues to do, or have the interest to do?
I'd never obviously step on the coach's toes. I'd say anything I would say, I would stay in the team environment, because, you know, when the coaches are there, so if they disagree with what I think, that they can say it. And I was talking to Jamie Heaslip recently. He's in Google now, and he's saying how scary, how open it is in meetings in rugby environments, like how honest and thing. He said, if you were anywhere as honest in his line of work now, it's just, you'd be fired. And that is a bit like that in rugby, but they're very open, frank, you know, reviews. And you know, at times you can dread them, you know, when you've had a bad game, where, you know, when we've lost especially, and you go in and you know it's going to be tough, and you know it's going to be some harsh words.
Is that all coach, those harsh words, all coach led?
It's a mix, yeah. Often it's led by coaches, but then, you know, players have the opportunity or forum to step up and say things if they want to.
Who are the best players in a Leinster Irish context at doing that feedback?
Like the senior players, really, but there's some young lads in Leinster now that have some big experiences under their belt. They've won Grand Slams, they've won Highland Cups, so they're, you know, they have a point of view as well. And we're encouraged, especially by Stuart, to find your voice and to say something if it matters, and but you got to be ready that if someone might disagree with you, and then it becomes a bit of an argument.
I was just going to ask you, how do you ensure that it stays for the want of a better place, safe, that you don't go out feeling worse than you came in, or some, especially a young player, might be going home mulling about this for the next 2 weeks and terrified to touch a ball?
Well, that's professional sport. Like, you can't, I think you got to learn that, you know, after these things, you got to take accountability and responsibility. And I don't think, you know, we'd be worried too much about feeling. Obviously, it's all constructive. It's nothing.
I was just going to say, yeah, there must be somebody ensuring, you know, every once in a while that it is constructive all the time. It's not just you.
But sometimes it is you. Sometimes if someone has a bad game, and I've been there before where it is you, and it is all your fault, and
you
can't get away from that.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, what do you do?
It's tough. You got to wait till the next game really to put it right, and that's why.
It could be a long time.
Yeah, it is if you get dropped. Yeah, and again, I've been there before, but it's the hardest part about sport, isn't it? Like form, like I would say injuries is the hardest part, but then form, you know, when things aren't going your way, and sometimes you just can't seem to put things right, and that can go on for a while. Sometimes you can have a one-off game, and then you just, you know, get your form back straight away. But for young guys coming through, I think knowing that. I suppose that's where senior players come in. You can say to the young guy, look, we've all had games like that. We've all, you know, had moments like that where you want to go and take them back, but you'll learn from it and you'll be better for it. And I think that's the most important thing.
Who was the player who did that for you when you were younger?
I had a few. I think my early days in Leinster, you know, Felipe would have been a big influence. You know, I think there was times where even guys like Shane Jennings, Leo Cullen would have had a big influence on me when things weren't going well. So I played in the 2008 season, played 10 a lot, and we won the league with Felipe 12. Gordon Darcy had a long-term injury, and we won the league. But the following season, Felipe's back, Gordon's back, and I'm back playing in the AIL. And, you know, you feel pretty much alone, and, you know, the coaches probably don't have a lot of time for you. And I remember those guys ringing me saying, look, we recognise, you know, what you did last year, and we, you know, just stay patient. And at the time, I think I was out of contract, and I was half thinking, you know, do I need to go and go to another club? And those guys, you know, were brilliant to me and made sure that I sort of kept, you know, my focus, you know, in the right place. And thankfully, at the end of that season, things sort of turned for me again.
What were you? What was your thought process at that point? Were you, was it a Joey Carberry style? I might have to head over there. Or what were you? What was it? How serious was it?
In Munster.
Yeah,
over there.
they've had me.
That's all I could say.
We're Roger.
Oh, you know, that's true. Yeah, that's, yeah. What were you? What were you thinking?
No, it was just like that was the conversation that I was having with myself. You know, is there a future here for me in Leinster? You know, I won the league last year, and now I'm back playing with Mary's in the AIL, and. You know, I was playing for Mary's in the AIL and playing for Ireland A, which was like I was third choice Ireland out half, and I was playing for Mary's.
Most people looking in would have said, well, so he just needs to ride this out a bit. But when you're in the centre of it, you're like, Jesus, this isn't happening quick enough.
Exactly. But like when you're that age, you're convinced in your own head that you should be playing. Like you've got this confidence, you just back yourself to be playing. Obviously, looking back, Felipe was, you know, world class and one of the best players in his position in the world at the time. Issa was covering 10 at that time, and obviously, you know, he's proved how unbelievable a player he was. So looking back, you know, I probably wouldn't have picked myself if I was the coach, you know, now looking back. But at the time, you know, I was just impatient, and same as a lot of young players are now.
The other thing with you, like, is that you're one of the, if not the most scrutinised sports people in this country, right?
So by you.
By me, yeah. Well, I would be a contributing factor. But, you know, so it's not just the coaches or the teammates or you that are sort of analysing what goes on. It's every jackass in the street obviously has an opinion about you. What's that like on a personal level, like in terms of, it's a pretty high profile thing. Like you mentioned the Google example. So somebody goes to Google, they have a crap day at work, they go home, the boss maybe has a quiet word with them, or nobody notices, nobody really pays too much heed. Whereas what you're doing, everybody has an opinion about it. What's that been that centre of public scrutiny? What's that like?
Yeah, it's had its, it has its highs and its lows, obviously, when things are going great and everything's great. It's brilliant.
Do you enjoy that when it's good?
I probably enjoyed it too much last year when it was good, and I forgot what it was like to be on the other end of it. And then sort of in around Christmas time last year, I found, you know, the other end of it pretty quickly after that Munster game. And it was a good, good learning for me, and good to see that the things could swing on such a small thing like that. And like I said, I haven't picked up or looked at anything since then. I haven't picked up a paper.
Really?
Yeah, and I probably fell into that trap. But for about 8-9 years of my career, I didn't look at anything. I met Enda McNulty when I was coming through in Leinster. He played a big part in us sort of getting over that last hurdle in Europe with him. And at the time, he just said, boys, nothing. Don't even go there. And I was religious with it. I never, right. You know, looked at things and searching or anything like
would
that.
You would read a newspaper just when it comes to sport. I ain't going that far. What would your approach to it?
Just see, I love reading about sport. You know, that's the thing. So I would have always, like I said, like even Trudeau was not reading about myself or reading about rugby, I would have loved to pick up and read about any sport that was going on. And I did that, and I tried, you know, to just stay away from the other stuff. And the reason I say it, I know you hear players say, I don't give a crap what they say. Like, I do care what, you know, people think and say. So that's why I stay away from it, because it bothers me so much. And it rattles me and gets me, you know, sometimes it gets me fired up, sometimes it gets me down. How can you think that? You know, that's not how it happened. So last year I probably fell into the trap a little bit, and you know, when you're winning Heineken Cups, Grand Slams, and you can't put a foot wrong, you kind of fall into that. I'll see what this guy's saying, or
what rating did I get there?
Yeah, so whereas now I'm just, it's brilliant for me, I just got away from it again, and you find yourself in a much better place, much happier place after you, because I know how things are in my own head. I don't need to see the endless opinions that are out there, and sometimes they're about your personality and stuff like that, when you know the only people that actually know you are your friends, your family, and your teammates. And you can judge a person by how he reacts in a moment when it's probably not fair to you.
There's a perception out there about you, obviously, that you're a serious guy, that you know there's not much crack going on and blah blah blah, blah. And that can just, like, exactly like you're saying, that can become a thing and everybody takes hold, and then that's just, it becomes reality. But obviously, that's when you're at the centre of that, you're a different person. I could understand why that would, like, you go to the shop, right? And so people are like, I don't know what that's like, you know, when you've had a great game, you go to the shop, maybe you just want to go in and pick up your loaf of bread and get the hell out of there. You've had a crap game, conversely the same thing. What's it like when you're trying to go about your daily life and you've got, as I said, every jackass or otherwise in the street's got an opinion about who you are and how you've done?
No, that's your end of it. You know, the public and the media, you know, you type of guys, they don't match up. You know what I mean? So you know, after I think it was after the, you know, Six Nations, there's times where, you know, through that, you know that the media is bad. You know that you're getting slated, but the public, you know, they're so supportive and they're unbelievable to you. You know, they're always, you know, thanks for that, thanks for the effort last weekend, it was brilliant, right. And you know, things just didn't go our way, as opposed to, you know, your crap and you didn't do anything right. So it's often they don't match up, sometimes they do, but often they don't, and that's why, you know, the Irish supporters and the Leinster supporters, they've been terrific over the years to us.
Your name actually was the first rugby player's name my nephew learned off when he was 5 years old. And he's an Irish speaker, and you used to hear him say real Connemara way, saying Jonathan Sexton. And every time he came on screen, he'd stand up and look, and he still does that. He's 9 years old now. So I'm assuming that happens a lot when you're out and about. You might see parents and kids pointing at you and going over for photos. And even if a bad day in the office, that must be nice.
Yeah, it is. And that's the flip side, isn't it? That, you know, when you talk about the scrutiny and all that, there's the other side where, you know, often you get praised.
And if you locked yourself away, you'd miss that too. And I think that's a good thing to
but
feel.
The argument is that you should stay, if you're going to stay away from me, you should stay away from both sides of the ball. And that's probably the mistake I made last year when things were going great. You can fall into the trap of listening to the good stuff, and then, you know, when you listen to it and you believe it, then you've got to believe it and listen to it on the other side. So, you know, I won't let it happen again. I think it was good learning from, especially with this year coming up. I think with the scrutiny we're going to be under in the World Cup, like, if you think the Six Nations was bad, and I think the level of scrutiny now at the World Cup will be a different level altogether. So it's a good lesson for us to learn.
It'll be a bit easier perhaps because the World Cup, I know it's a bigger event, but it's further away.
I don't know. We're always in our little bubble anyway, and we're in a hotel, we're in, you know, a team environment. I don't think we're ever too, you know, exposed. There's going to be like, I know it's a long way away, Japan, in terms of distance, and it's going to be an expensive trip for people. But you can almost guarantee we'll be the best supported side there, maybe apart from the Japanese. But we will be unbelievably supported, and it's something that shocks us every time we go there. And so we'll be in our bubble in a hotel over there, but I can guarantee you there'll be Irish people everywhere, and that's something we're looking forward to. Because when you go away to these tournaments, for some reason, the atmosphere when these Irish fans come over, it's much more special than an Aviva, for example, bar maybe a New Zealand game last year or an Ireland-England game, but the atmosphere that they generate when they're away from home is just really special.
Yeah, Tony Cascarino talking about it on the radio this morning, but that, so it was in the context of the Champions League, and he was like, his reference point was the World Cups that he played at and how they just become this totally different thing that nobody's ever known before and the expectation around them. What stage of your career are you at?
Halfway.
That's the optimist.
I don't know. I don't think about my own career like that. You know, I'm very driven by the next thing. So, you know, after Six Nations, you know, in many ways we've had three finals this year. You know, we've had the Wales game because, you know, if we'd won that, we were in with a chance of winning the Six Nations, despite all the ups and downs. We lost the Highland Cup final, and then we won the Pro 14. But I'm always very driven by the next thing. Even after Newcastle losing the Saracens, it was right. Let's go. Let's prepare for Munster. Let's get this right. And you know, I'm very similar now. You know, all my focus now is switched to the World Cup, and it's great to be able to finally say that, you know, and say it without feeling guilty. But all our focus now is on the next 5 or 6 months, and that's how I think about. That's how I've done it my whole career, really, and that's how I'm going to go about it. I'm going to try and enjoy it a bit more, knowing that, you know, there's probably not too many years left. But you know, I'm really excited about it now.
Would you make another World Cup? Is that too much?
I don't know, it all depends on body, really. You know, I think one thing that I've never, that I know hasn't diminished is been my, you know, hunger and love of coming back for pre-season. You know, I'm already looking forward to going back training and getting ready for this World Cup. So I think the day that stops, you know, it will be the day I retire, but I don't think that'll probably ever happen. I think it'll be the body that'll quit before that, as you see with so many other guys. And will you make another World Cup? It's more likely that I won't than I will, but there's always outliers, and I spoke about this before with every country. You know, you saw George Gregan play a World Cup, I think, when he was 37, Brad Thorne, you know, Paulie played one when he was 35, 36, Rory Best is going to play one. So there's been guys that have, you know, done it, and it's something that probably will get more common now with how professional guys are getting, and so we'll see.
Talk to Rob Kearney about how to squeeze a couple of extra years out of your contract negotiations.
No, I'm delighted he's staying. It was a decision that affected quite a few people, in terms of, like, I've played with Rob since I was, you know, 15, so I was desperate that he stayed around. I've never known a Leinster dressing room without having him and his sarcastic comments and slagging me off. So no, we're delighted that he's staying another year. And hopefully he can get a good run. You know, like I said, it's all down to your body at this age, and hopefully he can get a good run, and it mightn't be his last year.
A few questions coming in, and a couple of quick-fire rapid-round hit you with at the end as well. That's where the really tough stuff begins. But a couple of questions coming in here, so I'm just coming to these on the fly now. Danny Gormley on YouTube for Johnny. Where is the line to be drawn on the transfer of players between provinces, between maintaining competitiveness versus dilution of a province's identity? This is obviously, Leinster have been stocking up the various provinces with players that have come through there.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? Because obviously I'm, you know, obviously very split, being I want what's best for Ireland, but I also want what's best for Leinster. And it's that balance, really, in terms of, like, obviously if a guy is his third choice with a province, but he's good enough to be first or second with another province, yeah, you can see it. And you'll see players wanting to leave at that stage. I think there's been players at Leinster where they've, you know, you can't force someone to move. You know, the player's got to want to buy into it. And, you know, so it's, a lot has been made of the IRFU's role in that. But ultimately, if a player just goes, no, I'm staying where I am, as maybe Ross Byrne might have done as opposed to Joey, who said, yeah, maybe I'm better off going. Well, then that's what's going to happen. And that's what happens in every line of sport. But, you know, hopefully, you know, obviously I want Leinster to be as strong as possible, and hopefully we can continue to hold on to these to younger guys.
Philip Quill and Donnelly on YouTube says, the other morning, Alan Quinlan discussed whether Ireland should follow New Zealand in terms of letting players take a year sabbatical like Dan Carter, etc., etc., in our case, Johnny Murray, etc. Your thoughts?
I've had my sabbatical.
Is that how you're viewing it, is it?
I am now, yeah.
hindsight is a great thing.
It was the hardest sabbatical ever, though. I played about four or five games or something like that.
Not your typical sort of 6 months in New York.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you regret that? Are you kind of, I mean, I know you've spoken about it before, interested to listen to your thoughts. You were speaking to Gavin Comiskey the last few weeks about that and a few other things. Maybe it's never going to be a regret, but if you had it back again, would you do it differently?
Well, like, the circumstances were what they were. Like, if I had it back again, I'd have hopefully agreed a contract with the IRFU, and I would have been happy. And I was leaving the best club in Europe at the time, like, coached by Joe and, you know, Leo's captain, some of the best players, you know, Brian and Issa and all these guys. Like, so I didn't want to leave it, and I knew what I was leaving, and that's why I was so upset to do it. But when you take a stand and you say, I'm going to go if this doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, well, then you can't just go, okay, I'll stay anyway.
That's fair enough. Factors outside of your control.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what happened, and I haven't made any secrets of that. This is where I always wanted to be. But if those circumstances happened again with someone else, I'd say, you know, leave. Because, you know, you can't just say one thing and then do another. But when I got there, I threw myself into it. When I got there, I said, right, I'm here for the rest of my career. I know people say that, you know, things didn't work out, but at the end of that first year, like, they offered me a 5-year contract to stay, like, so I was obviously doing something right. They were, you know, thing, and then obviously when I decided to leave, then things, you know, changed a little bit with maybe the coaches and me, and I ended up taking 3 months off at the start of that year, just after announced that I was going back to Leinster. I took 3 months off with having met a neurologist, and things didn't go sour, but they weren't what they were, and I think maybe people thought, you know, I was back in Dublin already, and which wasn't the case. But looking back, I loved, you know, my time there off the pitch. You know, I learned French, had my first kid there, Luca, and we had some great memories, made some great friends.
Yeah, it's class. Everybody should do it for a little time. The meeting the neurologist was the concussion stuff and the take a bit of a breather. Was that the, I can't quite remember the details of that. Was that the?
Yeah, I had a few knocks over the end of that season where, you know, I haven't met this guy. He said, look, it's I wasn't suffering badly or anything like that. It was a sort of mandatory meeting with this guy. And in hindsight, it was great. Because you get a 12-week break and you come back and you know that, you know, you're perfect. But in hindsight, it maybe was one of the worst things I did because of the sort of stigma that gets attached to you with concussion. And you talk about concussion and people want to talk about me, you know. You try and insure yourself at the end of every season and you can't get insurance for concussion. And I'm like, why? Because the, you know, you've taken this break, and it was very precautionary, but...
That should be a failing on you, though. You took a precautionary measure for your health, and the fact that you couldn't get insured for a concussion is outrageous. Because it feeds into the psyche of it's just going to make players, when they are feeling symptoms of concussion, to not say it, which we all know that could snowball into something very different.
Yeah, maybe it isn't. It's not something I plan to talk about this morning. I'm trying to get away from the issue as much as I can. I've been blessed with injuries, and I've had a few bangs in the head over the years, but. We'll see. It is probably an issue going down the line with that insurance element of it.
Absolutely, because when you think about it, that somebody, you know, can you get insured for doing your cruciate? And people say that's normal part and parcel. Well, soul's banging your head. It should be normalised that this happens, and there should be, like you said, just it is what it is. It's just another injury, like every other injury.
It is. It is hard though, because there's the grey. You can see a ruptured cruciate on the on a scan. You can't with the. With a concussion,
not always,
no. And it's so obviously when insurance companies can't see perfect evidence, you know, they can't think that players are 100% honest, all these type of things, you know, it's that's where the trickiness comes in.
A bunch of questions in about Raj to various degrees. Wondering about how...
they're all Adrian's questions. He just told the people texting them in.
No, look. Aaron Kelly, does Johnny think that his game improved when he worked under Raj? And if so, in what way? And C. Malone, how would Johnny rank Raj amongst the coaches that he's worked under over his career? A couple of nice, easy ones.
Working with Raj, like, I learnt as much. Because Raj was, my first year in Racing, Raj came in and he'll say it himself, he was very much in a learning mode himself. You know, he was getting to grips with the language, he was getting to grips with, you know, the systems that they had, and he was in charge of defence the first year. Talking to Raj, like when I was in Ireland or looking at him, watching him for years as a kid growing up, that's where I learned from him. It's nothing he's ever said to me or done. You know, I've leant on him for advice at times and sort of asked him, you know, what you think here, what you think there, and that's where I learned from him. But in terms of as a coach to player, I'd say he's a very different coach now. Like, I'd say if he got the Leinster job, you know, next year and I was still there, that, you know, I'd probably start learning from him then, because he's had the experience of Canterbury, he's had the experience of Racing, you know, with Dan Carter, for example. So he'll build up these experiences, and then it's probably the younger guys that, you know, if he ever came back to Munster, for example, it's the Joey Carberry's or JJ Hannerins that would get the big benefit of all his coaching experiences then.
Raj coaching Leinster, you just said there without smiling.
Never say never.
we've asked him about it before in the show, and
I'll tell you, like,
he didn't bite anybody's hand off.
He's wanting Munster conversation harder, yeah.
A couple of quick fire ones, because we kept you longer than we'd planned. Liverpool or Spurs? I think you've kind of probably already indicated this one.
So yes, I actually really admire Liverpool as a club, despite being a Man United fan. But it's just a couple of their supporters, Fergus McFadden mainly. We've got this, we've got a masseuse guy, Vinny Mulvey as well, Liverpool. And he wouldn't have known they were Liverpool supporters before this year.
Coming out of the closet. Yeah.
So it's for those guys that I want Spurs to win, but I think Liverpool are incredible. Like those scenes at the end of the Barca game, the semi, like, you're
unbelievable.
Jealous. You know, just, it would be unbelievable to be in there, yeah.
Hurling or football?
I reckon hurling is probably the most skillful sport in the world. I probably watch more football than hurling, but 50-50.
Do you go to much of it?
I try to. Again, it's hard, you know, in pre-season, for example, it's when all the big games are on for us, when the All-Ireland starts, and we're Monday to Friday, you know, training ourselves to the bone, and then obviously you've got a Saturday, Sunday to go to a match, but, you know, you've got families as well, so I don't get there too often. I'll go to, like, the Fairweather supporters, I go to the big ones and put the jersey on and pretend I'm a season-long fan and lifelong
fan. Get the snap, exactly.
Take the jersey off and then head home, yeah. There's a few lads that are in that bracket, but I love watching it. I've such admiration for all of them. They're incredible athletes, and we could learn a lot from them, or we do learn a lot from them.
Who's the best, outside of yourself, who's the best 10 in world rugby at the minute?
Owen Farrell, probably. Bowden Barrett obviously won World Player of the Year 2 years in a row, and he does things that another right half, you know, there's no other right half that do it in terms of his just electrifying speed and how he can change a game in those moments. But I think Owen's proved over the last few years he's a world class 10, and you know, I love playing with them as a 12. It makes, you know, your job easier when you've got someone feeding you good information like that. And often he was the guy at 10, I was the guy at 12, and absolutely love playing with him. But yeah, I'd say he's up there with the best.
You said Sean O'Brien was the best forward in the that you played with, I think, after the Pro 14 final. Who's the best back you've ever played with?
Brian Issa. Tied.
Tied.
Brian probably.
Just nudges it. And finally, Fontaines, DC or the Furies?
Say that again?
The key might be in the question. Fontaines, DC or the Furies? The fact that you're looking at it likely says the Fontaines, DC are like this new sort of punk rock name that doesn't ring any bells.
I wouldn't worry because I was the same.
No, I, like,
I listened to Saw Doctors in One
Furious,
Direction, so what the hell do I know?
A boxing question. No comment.
Yeah, no no winner on that one. Johnny, an absolute pleasure. We've kept you longer than we planned to, but thanks a million for coming in. Really enjoyed the chat and enjoyed the downtime in so much as it's going to be.
Thanks.
Thanks a million. Cheers. Cheers. Johnny Sexton there.
Start your day with OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show.
We've seen this in them before, but there's I don't know when this box set is going to end.
Well, holy mother of God, I think that's the only thing to say this morning, and a very good morning to you, especially to Liverpool fans. It wasn't a dream.
It feels absolutely incredible, emotional, absolutely. There's just something happening, something that you cannot explain.
Ain't gonna be none of that. So I'm looking at them and I say, F you, F you, F you, F you, and F you.
You're a clown. This makes no sense.
How does that not make sense?
It makes no sense. It's completely inconsistent. It's complete.
How is it inconsistent?
It makes no sense.
Okay, I'll ask you a question.
Armand should be ahead of me.
Messi! Man, God!
The three most, say, Leo, is it Leo? Is that his name? The three most influential Leos of my lifetime. Messi, Da Vinci, and Leo Burdock.
Great idea, 10 for idea, but legitimacy now, I'd say, is 2.
There's only one place to start, and it is with a preposterous night in Paris.
Paul, like, bloody hell. It really was one of those nights.
He said that if Kildare don't show up, Mayo will go through.
Well, I'm not commenting on that.
Okay, what happened next?
I don't know what happens next. We have to wait and see.
Start your day with OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Watch or listen live from 7:30 and subscribe to the OTB AM podcast.